Welcome to the Athena Wellness Podcast, the show that invites you to take a seat around the community fire and listen to stories that inspire. I'm your host, Kathy Robinson, author, coach, and founder of Athena Wellness, a company that's dedicated to supporting you on your journey to live more wholeheartedly. Today's episode is brought to you by the Athena Wellness Academy, your resource for wholehearted living. The Academy's featured offering is an online course called From Type A to Type B, How to Mindfully Descend the Corporate Ladder and Invite What's Next. This course is perfect for you if you're contemplating or navigating a professional transition, and it's available as a self-study or with a small cohort of students facilitated by me, Kathy Robinson. To learn more, I invite you to go to athenawellnessacademy.teachable.com or click on the link in the show notes. Hello and welcome. Thanks so much for joining me. What would it be like to experience each moment to the fullest, feeling calm, having abundant energy, and feeling deeply connected in relationship? Our guest today helps his clients improve their lives through nervous system regulation, energetic attraction, and natural holistic wellness practices. I'm joined today by Adam Hart, who is a speaker, coach, and the author of The Power of Food. Here's what we cover. Adam's life-changing journey of self-discovery, how to make positive life changes without implementing restrictions, how regulating your nervous system helps in times of life transition, a simple way to set the tone for your day, and how that morning practice can lead to manifestation. You can learn more about Adam at clearimpact.io, and I'll put a link to his website, email, and book in the show notes. And now on to the show. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Adam, welcome to the Athena Wellness Podcast. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kathy. I appreciate it.
So please share a bit about who you are and what you do.
Well, I am, I really do consider myself a leading expert in terms of supporting busy parents to get unstuck, to feel more connected to daily fulfillment and be the ideal role model for themselves, their family, their community, and the world.
You had quite a journey, I think, that brought you to the work that you do today. And I'd love for you to share a bit about the self-discovery that you went through when you were in your 20s, just as a way to frame the conversation that we're going to have today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a very common experience in modern society. I was told all the ways that a lot of us are told in terms of how to get healthy. That didn't work for me. I had my rock bottom moment. I think I was about 25. I was pre-diabetic. I was living with ADHD, anxiety, depression, had my burnout, occupational burnout moment. And I kept relying on what everybody kept telling me to do. I tried all the different diets. I tried all the different fitness programs, you name it. I was on it. And the motivation was there, but the results never came in terms of the long-term experience of maybe it was more energy. Maybe it was getting rid of the extra weight around my gut, the better quality sleep, the less agitation, the shifting of my escaping habits. I never quite found the right solution. And then I did. And it came in the form of beginning to tune into my own ability to regulate my response to stress. And this is all around the nervous system regulation. And so my big discovery was a sport, rock climbing, that began to give me a deep perspective on how I could actually train my own stress response in the moments of my life elsewhere where I was very anxious. And my life transformed ever since.
What I love about that story is that it really was a journey, right? Mm. And I think your comment about you had the motivation, but you weren't seeing the results, that's very typical, right? We're always looking for that next thing. Mm. What was it that kept you going? I mean, most people don't hit burnout at 25, and you did, and there were a whole bunch of other things that are happening. But what was it, you think now, looking back, that kept you moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, there's a natural instinct for all of us to explore our own possibilities. And being that young, I think that helped me because I definitely had age on my side where I knew there was more to what was happening in my life and how I was feeling. I didn't understand how to tap into this idea of purpose, but I knew there was something. And I think there's this element where you do hit that rock bottom moment where there is a surrendering that happens. And that's not uncommon. And we see it in a lot of the different mentors and teachers out there. Somebody who I look up to a lot is Eckhart Tolle. You know, his discussion of his rock bottom, and very similar, where all of a sudden there's this element of, well, I have nowhere else to go, so I guess I could just let go of the suffering. And that's kind of where the light showed up for me. And, you know, again, I never lost motivation in terms of searching or seeking something, but it took that journey. It took a long time till the something actually showed up, and many years of suffering inside of my own mind until I was able to find the escape.
I think it's a very hopeful message. And what I love about what I've read about your journey is that you gradually added good things and then let, as you just mentioned, like you let some of the things that weren't working go.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe it was obsessive thinking or whatever it was that you felt was holding you back. Slowly let that go while adding good things to the mix. And I love that ideology, but was that intentional when you were going through it, or was it just out of trying all these different things and it kind of worked out that way?
Well, I mean, I knew from all the diets that I had tried that as soon as I tried to restrict myself in some capacity around what I was choosing to or not eat, I noticed that my brain would trip me up a lot and it would crave what I was restricting myself from eating. So I realized in that moment, okay, so obviously the restrictive process is doing something to my brain that my brain likes because it's creating stress, which is making it harder for me to stick to. So when I eventually found what I did find in terms of my ability to create more presence through the rock climbing experience, learning how to regulate my stress response in the moments of life that I was feeling triggered, that the moments where my brain was trying to trip me up, that I could actually work with that exact moment to teach my brain to not do that. And it opened up this doorway for exploring opportunities for adding things in a way where I wasn't feeling so stressed out by the changes I was making. I never had to eliminate anything in my process. It was always a matter of creating enough space to recognize that all I'm after is to disrupt the pattern of my own mind, so that my mind starts to give me space to explore the other choices that are available, right? So an example would be, you know, climbing taught me was that I can reset my own nervous system when I was in my own anxiety. So that's a real fight or flight moment. If you don't reset it while you're climbing, you actually could get hurt. But then I realized from climbing that, okay, so my whole life has this feeling. My whole life, I feel like I'm in a high state of anxiousness and fear and uncertainty and worry and frustration about my career, about my finances, about my relationships, about certain parts of my health. My brain had learned these patterns of keeping me locked in thoughts that kept me quite triggered. And so when I realized through climbing that I could reset my own mind in the climbing scenario of anxiety, well, why can't I do that in other areas? And that's when I brought it into my sugar addiction. That was the first place I brought the practice into, and essentially immediately began to transform my addiction to sugar by not eliminating it, but by breaking the mental pattern associated with it. And so how that looks, you know, there is a practice, it's called Heart Flow. This is my breath practice that I teach all my clients as the primary access to being able to start to cultivate a relationship with presence. It's a 5-step breath practice. It's just one of those things that when you realize that you can actually get yourself back into a state of power in 33 seconds and that you didn't have to go through a, arduous diet, big fitness program, meditating for 20 minutes every morning. I mean, these are all great things. But what I never realized was that my brain is operating 24/7. And it's locked into these pattern ways of thinking about my life because it likes the triggered response, because it likes to feed off of the adrenaline from my fight or flight response. And so when I reset it from climbing and got back all this beautiful power, more focus and motivation and strength and endurance, I said, okay, how can I bring this into my sugar addiction? And what I realized was, okay, in the moment that I'm craving cookies, and this was my big one, I love cookies, I still do, and the craving's not the same. But at the time, it was so heavy where I would just have a bunch of cookies in my mouth before I even knew it was happening. And you know, anybody with any addiction will know this process. You're already in it before you even know you're doing it. And that's coming from the brain's desire to just lock into being fed certain hormones and certain neurotransmitters. And so in the moments that I was craving the cookies, all of a sudden I said to myself, okay, Adam, picture yourself on the side of the cliff as if you're climbing and do what you do when you're climbing. But now you're standing in your kitchen holding the box of cookies and just pause. Do your breath practice, the 33 seconds, reset your own stress response, and let it go. You have the choice at that moment to either continue to choose to eat the cookies or do what other choice comes next. And from doing that process and that process alone, all of a sudden, I realized that the power of the craving started to dissipate. I didn't have to eliminate the sugar. But because I was no longer creating a reaction that my brain was feeding off of, my brain recognized, huh, okay, so Adam, you're not reacting to sugar. It goes through this process where the first little bit, it gets angry because it's upset, you're not reacting. And it's like the bag of candy you give to the kid, and then you take the bag of candy away, it's going to throw a tantrum. But if you're mindful of the fact that your brain just got louder around your craving, it becomes almost comical because you all of a sudden have a separation from it where you realize, wow, that never was me. I associated with it as that's who I was, but now it got so loud that you're like, oh my God, that's ridiculous. I actually gave into that for so long and didn't realize that I actually had the power to transform that relationship with that trigger. And so the beauty of the brain is it's such an efficient organ that if you stop reacting to a very specific pattern that you have reacted to for a long time, and you begin to do this work with it, it's going to let go of the trigger if you stop reacting to it. It might look for other ones to pull in, but it's going to give you freedom from that trigger. And what that does as a direct result, and the only result that I tell all of my clients and all of my community, the only result we should be after in this process is an intimate relationship to what it feels like to be at peace and calm and presence. Because that's what becomes your dominant setting when you do that kind of work with your own nervous system. When you train it to be in the parasympathetic rest and digest state, which is where we're meant to live most of our lives. But modern society has us flipped backwards, where 80% of our lives is lived in fight or flight. And so we have to train that back into ourselves.
And just for the audience's perspective, you came upon this and you learned this about yourself. You, in your 20s, found indoor rock climbing. And if I remember the story correctly, you were up on the wall and had realized that you weren't a big fan of heights. And there you were. And you had to find a way to soothe in that moment and continue. Is that a fair depiction?
Yeah. Yeah. There was something about the indoor climbing experience that I was able to play with my own fear response in an environment that actually felt comfortable to push. And I think for a lot of us, it's a place that we often avoid. We won't push into the uncomfortable. We won't push into the fear. And it becomes so big and so grand, and the mind really loves to create all these intricate stories around why we should stay comfortable, but yet there's no growth in comfortability. It's like nature's laws, abundance. If we're not growing, what are we doing? And it has a feeling experience to it. There's a correlating emotional frequency that comes from pushing your boundaries that you can learn to really embrace and get motivated from. And climbing provided that environment for me initially on the indoor side to play with the anxiety of the heights and, again, learn to control my brain's use of heights as a trigger, just like sugar.
I'm thinking we have a lot of listeners who are going through major life changes at the moment, right? So the fight or flight that they're dealing with is more, is this the right decision? Or the decision was made for them and suddenly they're triggered, right? Because they're in a place where they weren't anticipating being in, whether it was a change of job or it's an empty nest or whatever the big midlife changes are for us, right? So how might a practice like this, I love that it's called heart flow, how might a practice like this and developing a relationship with presence and with your own mind, how might it help somebody like that?
Ah, this is a big discussion. Because this gets to the quantum physics of this work, all right? And so this might land for some in an interesting way and some not at all. And some it'll be, wow, okay, I didn't realize that this was the answer. But the missing link for our experience of life is what true fulfillment feels like for us. What does it feel like to be in our own constant state of growth? Now, this has a frequency to it. We are energetic beings, and our nervous system is actually the portal for the frequency of our emotions that gets sent out to the quantum field. You can call it the universe, you can call it God, whatever you want to put as a label. But all that we are having as a human experience is a continual relationship with these emotions. Now, as we have an emotion, it gets sent out, it gets matched by the quantum field, and we feel more of that emotion. Okay. Depending on where you are in your life, you will have a very intimate relationship with the emotions you've had to this point. Unfortunately, in modern society, lots is set up for us to be stuck in a disconnect from our emotions. We don't feel at the full extent that we have the ability to feel into. And so by the time you enter into your adult ages, and then you get into your 40s and your 50s, you're still living a very patterned existence where you've had moments of feeling joy and feeling happiness and feeling fulfilled, but it wasn't quite a sustained experience where you've lived most of your time in that feeling. A lot of it has been a bit of a chase. How do I get it back? How do I get it back? And so when you enter into retirement age, there's this element of, okay, well, now there's this next phase coming up. Well, the phases really don't change in terms of you always have access to your own emotional frequency, which ultimately leads to how you manifest the rest of your life. So how do you start to play with that? How do you start to get in tune with what is really possible and how you get to choose to feel now in whatever you get to do next? And so there is an element of this that kind of leaps back to a deeper understanding of how the brain operates so that we recognize maybe where we have been stuck in our ability to feel the emotions we truly would love to feel more of. And then how do you strengthen the energy around the ones that you want to feel? And so the two pieces on this. So for anybody who's in a state where they're going through some sort of a change, one, you have to understand the pattern of your own mind related to the current level of your own emotions. Are you still stuck in a pattern from childhood that has you being in a protective state, your mind protecting you from feeling because of things you went through as a child? If you are, your brain is denying you the ability to work through that, which then ultimately locks you into what's coming next anyway. Now, the other one is, okay, well, now I'm in a state of my life where I do want to have more freedom. I'm about to retire. I want to just be able to relax, but yet it still feels very anxious and I'm still uncertain. Okay, well, if that's how you're feeling, that's all you're going to continue to manifest in your life. So you got to really begin to, in the moments you're feeling that anxiety, teach your nervous system to teach your brain to let go, to feel safe, to feel present, so that in the present moment, you can start to cultivate the relationship with the feelings you do want. And that's not an easy place for us often to find our way there.
Well, especially when you're in it, right? And so that's where I love to have this conversation for people who are preparing for something like this. Are there some things they can do? But before I get to that question, What is the purpose of emotion from your perspective?
Well, it's our compass. It's our life compass. And I think, you know, it's like the nervous system is our superpowers. And the ability to work with the nervous system is our emotional state. The thing that blocks us from understanding the full capacity of how our emotions work is our own brain. And we don't know this for the most part. I mean, a lot of us have heard this before, but we don't really know how the brain fully operates. And as a survival organ, it has these experiences from a very young age that if there is stress as a child, which we know if we all go through stress, there is no knowledge out there for parents to support their kids through the regulation of those moments. And so kids are growing up without those tools to regulate their own response to stress. So they get bullied at school, or they get picked on, or they have their first breakup, or their parent yells at them. Or it could be more traumatic, whether it's a molestation or anything that we would consider to be quite traumatic. The biological experience is the same. There's a response, a stress response. The brain is learning, very much like a computer system. It's learning the algorithms of when stress happens because it wants the adrenaline as its number one source of energy. So the brain learns from a young age to start looping pattern ways of thinking to keep getting us to be reactive. And as kids, those thoughts are dominated by self-esteem, self-worth, shame, and guilt. So then that's how we start to lock into a lifelong experience of depressive thinking. That's the past. The brain loves us to live there because it feeds off of our hormones. Well, then as you enter adulthood, now you have all of the future-focused, anxiety-based thoughts around your health, relationships, finance, and career. And the brain begins to learn algorithms around when you feel stressed about any of those, and it starts to loop pattern thinking about how to fix those or how to, you know, the uncertainty of all those. What we don't realize is all of these thoughts that we now are locked into reacting to have an emotional frequency to them, which is what is being represented by the nervous system to the quantum field. And we're just having more of that in our lives. So where you are in your life, it's always an opportunity to recognize that, okay, whatever comes next for me and wherever I am, it's all about cultivating a relationship with presence. Presence is where you're going to have the power to live aligned to the emotional frequency that you want. And it will lead you to getting to spend your time doing the things that make you feel more fulfilled, because you're going to manifest them. It's not for you to figure out what those are. What it is for you to do is to learn how to play with your emotional frequency so that it becomes very easy for it to show up in your life in a way where the action you take is inspired action.
It's interesting. As you would talk about the brain and algorithms, it's like the brain was the original AI.
It is, totally, yeah.
It keeps showing you your own internal YouTube videos, right? Of things from the past to keep you locked in and keep you engaged. And I think you make a good point in the emotions are meant to be like a compass, right? To be this guidance. And you can't really pay attention to the guidance if it's being overridden by this fight or flight type of response. Is that a fair way to summarize?
Yeah. And so the whole life experience without us even realizing it becomes this cerebral brain-based existence. Well, where's the heart involved in this? The heart is 10 times, 20 times, 30 times, 40, 50 times more electrical power than the brain. But yet we haven't learned to bring that into the equation because nobody has taught us how to regulate our own biological response to stress. And we don't have parents who know how to do that themselves, which ultimately leads to creating an environment that's called co-regulation. It's not the words the parents say, it's the frequency of their nervous system that allows the child to feel safe and feel loved and feel trust and secure, right? So we have a whole generation of kids growing up that don't have parents who know how to do this. Most of the parents are living in future-focused anxiety, uncertain thoughts, and still on their own self-esteem, self-worth patterns. And so, okay, well, if that's where most of us live, what we're missing out on most in our lives is being involved in these, the idea is this idea of co-regulated communities, communities of human beings who know how to regulate their stress response, who know how to activate their heart through the nervous system. All right. So this is, as soon as you reset your nervous system, 33 seconds, what you're doing is you're training your vagus nerve to be in a state of what's called coherence. That's your heart. Now, all of a sudden, you have this cleaner channel of communication from your heart to your brain so that your heart can teach your brain how to be at peace versus your brain always trying to force you into being distracted from peace. The more we tone the vagus nerve, the more you can feel the experience of what your heart wants to do for you and what your nervous system wants to do for you, where your brain can start to let go and give you space to experience life from this moment, because that's presence. That's what the vagus nerve is teaching us to do, is to feel what presence really feels like. And when we do, we realize, wow, it's extremely fulfilling.
So to get practical, for folks who, it could be a kid going to college, it could be somebody who's about to get married or have a baby, or somebody who's considering leaving a long-term career, any of those major life transitions that we go through, we know it's coming up. We can feel some level of anxiety. We can feel some level of fear. What are some practical things that we might be able to do when we feel that, to kind of work with that and to be in more of a relationship with presence? What does that look like?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And so, you know, I have a very particular six-step process that I put my clients through. The number one is really mapping your own mind, starting to have a real honest look at what are the patterns of your own mind and where are you being triggered most right now? Is it in your finances? Is it in your next career move? Is it in your kids and the need for your kids to be safe? There's going to be tons of these, but we want to just find one or two of the big ones and say, okay, I'm going to choose to focus on my next move in terms of my next move in career or retirement. I'm feeling anxious about it. Okay, well, now you have to work in the moments of life that you're feeling anxious to shift your brain's use of that anxiety to deny you the ability to have it be what you want it to be. So that's where heart flow comes in. Now you're committing to three times or more every day, you're committing to training your vagus nerve to teach your brain to let go of that pattern. So if you think about that, three times or more a day, and I know, well, what does that actually mean? It's less than 2 minutes a day of very focused, committed breath practice. But it's doing it in a way where you are guaranteed to feel the results of a little more peace, a little more calm, a little more presence. So that's key, is you have to be willing to commit to the practice, but then also commit to noticing that space it opens up. That space is critical, because then once you know that that space is available for you and what it feels like to be here right now for you, because I don't know what it feels like for anybody else. I know what it feels like for me, and it took a long time to cultivate that, but it starts to expand. You start to want to live there more because you recognize, wow, this feels good. My brain actually feels healthier. I feel more focused, more motivated, more excited for life. And you start to change how your own physical biology works, decreasing inflammation, better digestion, hormonal balance. So it becomes very motivating. But what it also does do is it leads into manifesting more practices that bring you that same feeling. The number one that I manifested very quickly was nature, being in nature, and specifically grounding in nature. So what does that mean? Well, there's two things that I do dominantly with myself and my kids is getting barefoot. So doing barefoot walks, barefoot hikes, that might sound completely strange. And I used to do tons of corporate wellness trainings, and we would go outside and get barefoot during some of the trainings. And at the end of the day, people would always say that was the strangest part of the whole day, is going barefoot on the ground. Well, you know, so think about this for a moment on that one practice. You know, if you commit to a morning practice of going outside and putting your bare feet on the ground, you are immediately putting yourself in a calm, rest and digest nervous system. It happens naturally. So you don't have, I mean, it's great, you can add in heart flow to it, but you have on average on the bottom of your feet, for every inch of the bottom of your foot, you have about 6,000 nerve endings. So this is the electrical circuit of your whole body. So if you're living in a cellular dysfunction from overstress, which creates a lot of what are called free radical molecules, so they're attacking your cell structure. And all of a sudden you put your bare feet on the ground, you're going to upregulate from the grounds, the energy of the earth, what are called free electrons, which help to take those free radical damaged cells and clean them up and heal them. So what does that mean exactly? Well, putting your bare foot on the ground is actually one of the best anti-inflammatory known to mankind. And it's free and takes you no more than 2 minutes to go and do, right? So the other result of just getting grounded like that is the feeling that you get of being present. And that is a very contagious, and I'm mindful of that word contagious, but it's a very motivating feeling, which again, that's what we're after, is we're after finding ways that we can cultivate a relationship with that presence so that we get in touch with the emotional state of that. Because it then gives you these opportunities to start to play with, which is another one of these practices I want to talk about, which gives you the ability to start to play with what I call your perfect life vision. Okay, so now that I have presence to be here in this moment, I'm practicing heart flow multiple times a day. I'm feeling more peaceful, more calm. My brain's got more space, more motivated. I'm grounding a little bit. So now I've got these beautiful couple practices. Now I want to start to craft, okay, I have some uncertainty in this area of my life. I'm not sure what I'm going to do next. Okay, well, you have to create some clarity around that now. And so there's a process I take my clients through that really focuses on crafting an emotional expression of how you want to live your life right now. What does that look like for you in your ideal scenario? And it's not so much the outcome you're after. You're after the emotional feeling of it. And the more in the present moment, you can then use your imagination. So you're outside putting your bare feet on the ground for the first few minutes of your day, doing heart flow breathing, and visualizing what you have as your perfect life statement. It's going to bring this feeling into your body that is undeniable. You are now beginning to manifest in other ways into your life. And so that's where the paying attention part comes in. You want to start paying attention very closely.
So it's not about naming what you want to feel. It's about feeling what you're feeling and trying to put a name to it, because there are other things working in concert with what's creating this feeling.
Yeah, and I don't know if it needs language. It just needs to be connected to in a way where you can recognize the emotional expression showing up again in your life. We get so caught on outcome, and this is one of the big misnomers of goal setting or even intention setting, is that we think, okay, I'm going to set the intention that I am going to lose 20 pounds in the next 30 days, and that's when I'm going to be able to do this or have this. Okay, well, that's got a lot of disruption possibilities, a lot of mental stress disruptions. And also in terms of language, the words we use and the things we think all have a frequency to them. And so if we don't craft this right and don't engage with the energy of it quite right, then it's not going to flow with ease. And if you're also stuck on it having to be 20 pounds, that's going to get you that result. You're just missing out on the emotional part of all this. So you use the outcome as the ability to feel the emotions of being able to achieve the outcome. But it's important that we know that it's not the outcome we're after the manifestation of the emotion. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking back to you have mentioned that manifestation was something that you were doing back in, again, when you were in your 20s. And so I'm thinking about, it was this wonderful story about this 5-year plan you put in place and how you walked toward that, right? It wasn't goal setting. It was more of putting an intention out there. And then you take people through in the book, and we'll talk about your book in a little bit. You take people through kind of what that process was. And you mentioned practices like paying attention and visualizing and all of that. Was that a precursor? Like, is this something that you built upon? So just kind of help me frame that.
I love it. So in relation to what I discovered, this is probably about 5-6 years ago, was that, and so when I wrote The Power of Food, which was really my exploration into how I transformed my sugar addiction through using this methodology, the just adding methodology. I had not yet discovered the ability to let go of the outcome. So when I got the book and I got on stage, you know, I did 400 plus presentations over a 6-7 year period, rah, 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 doing the big cheerleading and getting on all the TV spots. And so much of that for me was locked into, I have to have it this way. Like, I got to be a big influencer. I got to be on the big stage. It's got to be like this. And it was awesome. I had such a great time, but it was an addiction, right? It didn't realize that at the time that my mind was so locked into it having to be this way that I didn't notice the disruption of my own energy and my own emotions around it, to where I missed out on the possibilities that were always there. And so when I finally got to that point of, okay, I feel really great. Like, things are going really well, but yet there's still something that's lacking. And what is it? What am I missing here? And that was when I realized it was the outcome. I said, okay, Adam, what if you let go of it needing to look a certain way and you really are just focused on the feeling it brings you? And as I continued with my daily practices, which are all around optimizing my nervous system, brain relationship. It's not a diet for this purpose or a fitness program for that purpose. It's all for my nervous system. And that's when I manifested the work that I do now. It became very intimate, very small group-based, highly emotional interactions with the parents I get to work with in such a beautiful way, in such a very fulfilling way, which was the feeling that I was trying to cultivate. But it was always, I always thought it had to be me on a big stage, rah, 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 where all of a sudden now the fulfillment that I wanted, as when I let go of the outcome, all of a sudden it just showed up in a way where I get to just hang out with cool parents and do this work together.
I love that example of how that became another trigger. That was actually one of the follow-up questions that I had for you, because I find that as well, that you think you're focusing on one particular thing that's tripping you up. Maybe you get a handle on that for a while, and then you realize where that space opened, something else kind of snuck its way in.
Right.
And that's exactly what you just outlined there. So there's another point in your book where I think maybe this is what led you to the work you're doing now. And again, that your book is called The Power of Food. But the quote is, to be open to the opportunities that are in front of you right now, the universe is constantly aligning your dominant thoughts to receive and experience all you desire. Mm. And that led you to a practice that you outlined in the book called My First 10. Mm-hmm. Is that something you still do, or has that been supplanted by a new practice?
Yeah. So My First 10 is still a dominant part of my process and something all my clients go through. The only part that shifted is the detachment of outcome. So the practice is very much the same way. It's just now when you go through the process of working with your ideal vision, your perfect life vision, it's in a deeper understanding that it's the emotion that we're working with. It's not the outcome. The outcome we're using to get to familiarize ourselves with what it feels like to be that way, but it's only the feeling that we're learning to pay attention to, not when it shows up as that outcome. That makes sense.
Again, just to bring it for the listeners to be able to kind of wrap their heads around and how this might be useful to them. So I know you go through a whole process, and I know we'll put links and we'll talk more about what you're offering for our listeners and how they can get in touch with you. But just something to consider that somebody can put in place. The suggestion is find a way that grounds you, whatever that might be for you. And to be able to have this sense of where you want your life to go and allow the feeling to arise from envisioning what this might look like. Is that a fair way to summarize?
Yeah. And there is a whole process that we take our clients through. But in this process, you learn to really explore the living energy of your vision, because it's not just a static statement of, oh, I'm so excited that I wake up feeling healthy and strong. Okay, yeah, you start with that. But then as you do this My First 10 process, and there's a sequence of closing your eyes and visualizing, and your imagination starts to fill in the gaps with more clarity and more detail. Your role is to continue to notice the detail, continue to write down the detail, continue to put up some, you know, the vision board idea of the visuals of what the expression is of that emotion for you. So you want to really start to bring the emotion alive inside of your body. And at the same time, you're training your heart to teach your brain to let go of the other emotions that are blocking you from fully embracing this in a way where it starts to kind of just grow. It's this spark of light that you're learning to cultivate a relationship with, that when you're biologically, so using proven scientific-based tools to train your brain to let go, you feel the results of the commitment to doing this. And my first 10 is just a really important first 10 minutes of your day that sets your vibration up to give you the most opportunity to continue to feel that experience throughout your day. If you don't have that morning routine, you know, and Tony Robbins calls it priming your state. And essentially, you're priming your emotional frequency. And if you don't, then your brain's going to win the day. And it's going to win the day by the first thing that starts to think about, which for a lot of us, especially as parents, you come downstairs, depending on the age of your kids, and you're starting to be triggered by the fact that they're not eating the things you want. They're screaming and yelling at each other. You know, now you got to get them out the door and you got to prep all the things for whatever your day looks like. And you're lost. You're in that frequency now. And it's hard to let your brain know that it can let go of that kind of pattern.
Yeah, I love the consistency, the simplicity, the fact that it's connecting to presence and it's making us pay attention, right? It's not just something where you're just kind of letting go. It's just you're really paying attention to what's coming up and then building off of that, and hence the consistency.
Well, and you do get, you find that you get mentally strong. Like you're the first things you notice outside of the peace and calm. Well, now all of a sudden your executive function starts to turn on again, right? Because that's turned off for most of us because of how fight or flight is. It's a biological response. You don't need your brain to work when you're in a fight or flight scenario. You're meant to fight or flee. But now all of a sudden you're training yourself that, wait a minute. I actually can be more focused when I'm about to go grab the sugar, or I can be more focused when I'm about to go grab the drink, the alcoholic drink that maybe I don't want to have. And you begin to have this deeper relationship with the other possibilities now that want to be part of your life. It just takes something. Now, I will say this, once you do gain this elevated strength of your own relationship with presence, well, now you can look at the other areas of holistic wellness. Now, and this is the last, so my clients go through a 3-month process and we don't go anywhere near these areas until the 3rd month. Now your foundation is strong, your relationship between your heart, nervous system, and your brain. Now you can look at your sleep. You can look at nutrition. You can look at your fitness, your relationships, your environment around you. And all you're doing in those areas is learning things you can add in to help strengthen that relationship. You're not adding in things around nutrition to lose weight or around sleep so that you get a better quality sleep. Those all come naturally from giving your heart and your nervous system the love that it wants.
Perfect. And what a beautiful way to bring this to a close. I'd love for you to tell our audience where they can find you, what they can find when they get there. And of course, I will link everything up in the show notes.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Kathy. Yeah, clearimpact.io is my website, clearimpact.io. Right now, it's set as the 6 steps, which is called the Unleash Your Energy Roadmap. But I think we are going to maybe change that to the Heart Flow Practice. But if anyone's listening to this and you go onto that website and you want the roadmap and you don't see it there, just send me an email, adam@clearimpact.io, and I'll send you the 6-step roadmap. And same with Heart Flow. Those are the 2 things I would recommend.
Wonderful. Such an amazing conversation. Adam, thank you so much for joining me today. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Kathy. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I know there are many ways you can spend your time. Thank you for choosing to spend it with me. Until our paths cross again, be kind to yourself and show your warrior spirit some love. If you know anyone who could benefit from today's episode, please pass it on. And many thanks for supporting the show by subscribing and leaving a review. It means a lot, and it helps others find their way to our circle. If you'd like to access the show notes, have a question you'd like addressed on a future episode, or would like a transcript of this episode, visit www.athenawellness.com/podcast. Until next time, be well.